Hello, I'm Pip, and welcome to the Midwife Pip podcast, the home of expert information and real chats on all things pregnancy, birth, and beyond. Remember, as a podcast listener, you can get 15% off my online courses at midwifepip.com using the code podcast15. The power of our gut health on our own well-being is incredible. But then when we uncover the power it has on our children, it's nothing short of mind-blowing. Such simple changes that can literally have life-changing consequences, all because of the amazing little microbes in our gut. This week, I'm really excited to be joined by Lucy Upton, a highly specialist pediatric dietitian and feeding therapist with over 12 years of experience. She's now the director of the Children's Dietitian Limited and works independently to provide one-to-one and group dietetic services for parents run by her team of pediatric dietitians and support education for families. Ultimately, her passion is to cut through all of the pressure and nutrition noise when it comes to feeding kids, helping parents to support their kids with happiness and health through feeding and nutrition. She's particularly passionate about topics including the early years, food allergy, gut health, weaning, and food refusal and difficulties in children, which is why I'm very excited to welcome her on the podcast today. So hi, Lucy, and thank you so much for coming on to join me.
Hi, it's lovely to have, it's lovely to be here. We've chatted about it for ages, haven't we?
I know, we've pulled it off despite you being navigating a house move and obviously growing a human and me being full of chicken pox, which is delightful. So well done to us, first of all, for pulling it off.
It could just be a podcast full of cotton wool by the time we're finished. Yeah. Everyone will be like, what am I listening to?
But do you know what? It's something that only women could pull off. It's only us that could have done this. So,
100%. 100%.
Well done just for being here. We've achieved a lot.
We have.
But I wonder, Lucy, if we could kick off with discussing the words gut health and microbiome, because I kind of feel they've become buzzwords in the health world. And when we hear terms so often, it kind of dilutes what we're actually talking about. So would you mind explaining what actually the gut microbiome is for anyone listening who's thinking, what are they even talking about?
Yeah, it is really buzzy, isn't it? It's definitely trendy. And you know, it's not a bad thing that it's trendy because it's fascinating. And, you know, before we go on, but the one thing I won't promise is that I'll have all the answers, because you'll probably know this. It's actually one of those areas that we understand a lot about, but as you understand more about it, there's more you realise that you don't understand, and that we've got such a long way to go to understand it in a lot of depth. But I mean, what is it? You know, I think, you know, without making it too scientific, we're talking about this huge variety of different organisms that we have in our gut. I like to call it like a gut garden. Like, you don't want your garden to just be grass. You want it to be nice and full, lots of different flowers and herbs and species. And we want that nice diversity. So it's all those microorganisms, so things like bacteria, fungi, like these single cell animals. I'm trying not to throw it back to people's A-level biology too much. And they collectively together get referred to as the gut microbiome. And the other thing that they do is it's not just those microorganisms, it's actually all of the genetic material that those microbiomes like have. And there is tons of genes down in our gut as well, which I find fascinating, like more than the human genome. Like, it's amazing. It's incredible. So it's kind of this big word for this collection of everything down in our guts. And it's really, really personalized. So, you know, we always talk about it being a fingerprint, in that like you can't duplicate it. No two people's gut microbiome will be the same. And it's really, really important for our health. And we are understanding more and more about how important it is. And, you know, we know what it does. So we know that microorganisms are there for things like digestion, taking nutrients out of food, production of vitamins. But actually, there's these really, really important points around immune function, protection against pathogens, cognition, regulating our metabolism. We're kind of delving into Pandora's box, really, when you start looking into how much it has an impact on health-wise.
And I think that's one of the fascinating things, isn't it? Over the years, the evidence has really started to come to light around the impact of our gut microbiome that probably wasn't really there a generation ago. You know, certainly My parents wouldn't have thought about their gut health when they were having children.
Not at all.
It wasn't a thing. Whereas now it's really emerging, and that's what's so exciting in this field and in the field that you work. But yeah, from my point of view, I suppose, as a midwife and a mum to a little person,
yeah,
what interests me so much is how the gut microbiome impacts our babies and our children.
Yeah.
What's your take on that, Lucy?
It's massive. I mean, and I think this is one thing that is really important to remember. I mean, you'll know as a midwife, and people might have heard the term before, you know, when we're talking about children's health in general, we have this first 1,000 days. Super mega important. We're like laying all these foundations for health, for development, for prevention of disease. And it kind of can feel a bit mind-boggling, can't it, when you're like, what do you mean something I'm doing in when my baby is one or two or even at 6 months old is going to like look that far forward? But it is absolutely massive. And all of the data that we have at the moment shows us that first 3 years of life is really key. And I often sort of talk to my parents about thinking sort of, why is it so important? And, you know, you start off with a baby who really starts to get inoculated with bacteria from delivery onwards. And even delivery, as you will know, can impact sort of what bacteria they're first exposed to. And then so within that first 3 years, what we see is this sort of infant gut transformed from this largely sort of sterile place, although there is a little bit of evidence coming out now that some microorganisms might pass the placenta. We don't know enough about this yet, but there's some interesting information, to having like an adult, like a fully grown, for want of a better term, sort of gut microbiome. So you've got this three-year period to sort of really shape what it looks like. And there are so many things that impact what's going on in your gut. And if, you know, people leave this podcast with anything, I really want to highlight, you know, there are things outside of our control, where we live, geographical location, stuff like that. Can't we do much about that? But then there are things that we can modify or do have an impact on the development of this gut microbiome or these bacteria, for better or for worse, really. So, you know, we've got these huge, so it might be helpful to talk through some desirable things. So things are great for guts, nature, dirt,
getting out,
letting our kids getting messy, yeah, and outdoors. You know, I've had lots of conversations with you know, parents, pediatricians, and people that I work with, and think, you know, COVID, when we were largely indoors and there was, you know, we were disinfecting everything, you know, like all of the shopping as it came in. I'm really, really interested to see sort of what comes out of that population of children in that 3 year time frame. But then we've got exposure to people, and as annoying as it is, communal childcare is a good thing for kids' guts. I know they're all looking the same. Yeah.
Are you sure? My
house is
saying otherwise at the moment.
Yes, I know. Whilst the bill comes in, whilst your child isn't there. Yeah. But people are good. We like to share, yeah, bacteria. That, you know, lack of mixing is sort of less desirable. Sharing things is good. You know, we know that they probably, you know, everybody's licked the balls in the ball pit, haven't they? Dribbled. They're all dribbling on something. Even things like pets and animals are a good thing, actually, for our kids' gut microbiome. And then there's lots of these modifiable factors that obviously I'm very interested in around feeding. And feeding is massive for that early infant gut microbiome, because we're looking at factors like breastfeeding, weaning and progression through weaning, and then sort of the diet as it evolves, which, as we know, you know, if I put some of my other hats on, take my gut health hat off for a minute, you know, establishing good dietary patterns young is very, very conducive to supporting a child's sort of journey with food, nutrition, and prevention of disease for life. So definitely, definitely what children are eating as they establish sort of through weaning and into their sort of normal diet is really, really, really important.
And that's all we want, isn't it? We want our children to be healthy and thriving little beings.
Yes.
So the idea, yes, that we have to park those uncontrollables, but actually, yes, there is stuff we can do to help them, I think, as a parent, is a really empowering, positive thing,
yeah,
to hear from an expert like you. One, yes, of the things that I wanted to perhaps myth bust with you, Lisa, to ask you, is it true that gut health can reduce our child's risk of allergic conditions? So things like eczema, asthma, allergies in infancy and later life, because they're definitely conditions we're seeing a rise of, aren't they?
Yeah, the jury is a little out, but I think that we know that it probably does. there is probably, so we need a lot more data in this area, because sort of allergic manifestations can come across in a lot of different ways for children at different times. But we do also know things like food allergy are most likely to develop in babies and young children. And what we are starting to see are some levels of correlation between things like antibiotic use and factors that affect the gut microbiome and allergic risk. And like anything else, it's much sort of multifaceted. You know, there are genetic elements we cannot control for around atopy allergic risk, but there is a wealth of data now basically coming through about lots of conditions, including allergy, asthma, obesity, cardiovascular disease, celiac disease. And it's fascinating sitting in these conferences, listening and going, we're understanding more about what it might have been. And I know the big money question then is people going, what can I do to make it not happen, Lucy? Can I prevent food allergy, for example, by, you know, doing something in a particular way to support their gut health? And I think, you know, there isn't a clear just do this and this, you know, 1 + 1 = 2 and you'll be able to avoid something. But, you know, there's certainly some lovely, lovely data. There was one of my colleagues who's actually a fantastic allergy dietitian. She works out in Canada now. She's really, really well known, did a lovely study that looked at essentially the more foods that we got in through weaning. So we call it dietary diversity, just means variety, how much variety got in. So for every new food introduced during weaning, the child's risk of being allergic to food, so allergy, decreased. And that's not just the, obviously that includes foods that are allergenic foods, which we now know we want to get in early and give often. It was food and diversity overall, which suggests sort of a really good relationship between more is better, more of the right foods is better. That's going to help sort of populate our gut with the bacteria that we want to be there, and, you know, prevent things like dysbiosis, which is essentially, you know, when there is not enough of a good bacteria, too much of a bacteria we don't want there, or just generally this imbalance that may predispose sort of disease.
Fascinating. So that's a really great practical thing that parents can do when they approach weaning, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
One of the other things I wanted to touch on with you, Lucy, is mental health, because this is definitely something we're seeing a massive rise in young people as well as adults, and it's great that we're recognizing it. But one of the things that certainly when I've looked into the evidence that seems to be quite high up there is the brain and gut axis and how this is relevant to our gut health supporting our mental health. And do you see much of that in your practice, in what you're doing every day with families?
Do you know what, I think I would be interested to know later on how my kids fare, because I think sometimes, and you're totally right to bring this up, because I think sometimes we look so much at physical health and we go, how can I prevent this? I don't want my baby to have reflux, colic. We go in with all of those things that are challenging us straight away. We sometimes think and forget about the impact sort of on mental health, but also sort of brain health in general. And we do know that there is a link with brain health, and it is again increasingly well evidenced now that the gut microbiome development and all those things we've talked about that affect gut microbiome development also impact that signaling between the microbiome and the gut. The gut talks to the brain and everything loops back around again. So we've seen kind of gut health be implicated in things like later disease like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, but actually when you start to look at risk factors for neuropsychiatric illnesses that we see, perhaps, you know, that may start to develop in teenagers, so anxiety and depression, again, more and more evidence coming through about this. And it is so hard to kind of describe top level biology. I mean, I love biology and I love translating science, but even, you know, we all sit there sometimes like, ooh, how do we break this down to exactly what's going on here? But we know that those cells in the gut are talking to the rest of the body, the immune system, the brain. So yes, there is a link there. And again, I think it's the way I frame it with parents is that when we think about feeding, so when we think about why it's important, one of the many reasons why it's important to support parents with breastfeeding, weaning, not getting stuck in sort of a rut through the weaning process and sort of, you know, not getting the exposure that kids need to a good variety of foods, we're really sort of investing now. I kind of talk about it like an ISA. You know, it's the sort of thing they're going to want when they're 18 or 25 or older. even though you can't see the benefits of it right now. Mm. So I'm always like, put it in the piggy bank for another day. So yeah. The way I often describe it in practice, it's so hard when you can't see any kind of immediate benefit, but it's totally worth it.
And it's those small little changes, like you're saying, you know, that bit of extra variety in those early weaning days, which actually is when you've got the biggest control over what your child's eating.
Oh, 100%. The while they're off doing their own thing. Yeah. We'll talk about that. We can talk about, and I think people get overwhelmed when we start talking about offer them lots of foods and offer lots of variety, you know, and I think people immediately divert to those fantastically beautiful, but I think hugely unobtainable plates that you sometimes see all over Instagram and stuff that put like, here's my child's dinner and there's like 15 different foods on there. And I'm like, wow, that's like that. It doesn't, I think that's what people think it has to be. And it really doesn't.
It's just really heartbreaking when you display it all beautifully for an Instagram picture and then your child gets hold of it. And actually,
I'd love to see all the after photos. I really would. I promise you I will do this.
Yes.
I promise. Pretty before and afters. Yeah, absolutely. Like the reality, it's on the floor and the dog's eating it. It's up the wall. It's been spat out. You've eaten half of it.
Yeah, but they've had fun.
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
Oh, it's so interesting, isn't it? It really does impact our entire well-being as little people and as adults.
As adults, yeah.
And you mentioned a little bit at the beginning, Lucy, about antibiotics and gut health. And I know this is a massive concern for lots of healthcare practitioners.
It is.
At the moment. What is the deal with antibiotic use and the impact on our guts?
The short top line answer is they're not friends, which most people are unsurprised by, because even the name, you know, when we think about what is down in the gut, they're very, very sensitive as well. And like antibiotics, particularly certain strains of antibiotics, but generally if we just get the paintbrush out, antibiotics across the board, you know, there are big studies, there are big systematic reviews that show us this big reduction in things like diversity. So me thinking back to that garden at the beginning, like, oh, we'll take down a few of these shrubs and all these nice flowers, we'll get rid of those. And particularly, you know, when we're looking at that, we're looking at like strains of bacteria which are really important, so Bifidobacterium and Lactobacilli, those sorts of, the population of those nice happy good bacteria start to decline, and we start to see sometimes therefore an environment where other bacteria that might be considered to be a little bit more harmful, for want of a sort of better term, like E. coli, might increase. And so you get this reduction in sort of diversity, which obviously has an impact. We get like lack of this sort of richness that we need in the gut garden. And that leads to this potentially this dysbiosis that I was talking about, this sort of mismatch between where the biome is and where we would like it to be. And I really want to highlight, you know, as a medical professional, there are times when children need antibiotics. There's time when we all need antibiotics.
Of course, absolutely.
They have such an imperative role to play. And I think kind of a little bit of the responsibility now as health professionals, I don't know if you'd agree, is, you know, I mean, I don't prescribe antibiotics personally, but is about making sure that we're using them appropriately. You know, so when your child is going through all these nursery bugs, you know, are we dealing with a viral illness here that isn't going to respond to antibiotics anyway? Or are we dealing with something where actually we categorically do need antibiotics? And, you know, and perhaps there's something about education for parents when it comes to antibiotic use, and then ways that you can support sort of re-establishing, repopulating the gut afterwards. You know, lots of people ask me about things like probiotics and stuff like that, and I would say it's an area that lots of health professionals still are a bit like rabbit in headlights, because it's getting a bit like the vitamin aisle, isn't it, when you're like, oh, look at this choice,
which one works,
which one should it be? And, you know, again, that's very individualized. It's, they're not all the same. You know, you'll be looking for particular strains of bacteria that you might want to replace, and we need to make sure that those probiotics are bacteria that are going to actually make it to the gut, because lots of them don't. They get washed up in stomach acid and things like that. So I think the thing is, appropriate prescribing is key, because we can't avoid it. And I don't want any parent listening to feel dreadful, because, you know, babies have antibiotics sometimes as soon as they're born. And it's about that risk, isn't it? And weighing up the decision-making along the way.
Absolutely. And, you know, like you say, if they need them, then that the balance of antibiotic versus gut health is in that favour of antibiotics. But it's then, like you say, actually, what else can we then do to try and support our little ones so they don't have such an impact? And then really, I suppose, supercharging those other opportunities. So whether it is breastfeeding from birth, whether it is that weaning later on and getting that variety in or getting them outdoors for a daily walk, all those other little things that you can do.
Exactly.
But it's never a place of guilt if your little one has had antibiotics, because we only ever do things in the best interest of our babies, don't we?
Exactly. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I think what's concerning is that there are sometimes these moves now to move away from them completely. And I've seen children get very sick.
Yeah. And that's dangerous, isn't it? We've got that
is dangerous. You know, that's dangerous. It's all about a balance, and it's all about weighing up and decision making for your child in that moment with, you know, an informed choice.
Amazing. Now, Lucy, you mentioned variety. Yes. I wonder if you could share with us some more kind of practical tips or tricks that parents can do to support that very important, as we now know, gut microbiome of babies or toddlers. I hope that you're enjoying and learning as much as I am on this chat about the power of gut health. It really is fascinating and more powerful than we have realized for many generations. Gut health is one incredible way to support your baby's immune system, which is developing in the early days, weeks, and months of life, and is essential for them being well, thriving, and healthy children. But there are other things we can do to support a strong immune system too. Head over to www.apticlub.co.uk/midwifepip to find out more.
Okay, so I mean, babies, we could sit and talk for an hour on breastfeeding. If I had one message, if there was just one thing, the more you understand about breastfeeding and breast milk and the impact that has on the gut microbiome, it is astonishing. I could bore you to tears for about 4, 5, 6 hours on this. So I suppose my message here is that if breastfeeding is something that you want to do and that is important for you, please know that the benefits from a gut perspective are second to none. You know, there's fascinating things within breast milk. So one of the biggest components of breast milk is something called human milk oligosaccharides, HMOs, sometimes people might have heard them called. Really interesting that they're such a massive component of breast milk, but they don't actually offer any nutritive benefit. They're not there for calories. They're not there for protein or fat. Their job essentially is to get down to the gut, and they are incredible at supporting this proliferation of the bacteria we want in the gut. And there are specific species we see associated with that. And, you know, HMOs are really difficult to replicate anywhere else. They're very different from mother to mother, geographical region again, but incredible. It's fascinating. So breastfeed, you know, it's a big message for me, but I think it's because lots of the other benefits for mum and baby are often talked about. But what really interests me is, are some of those benefits actually modulated by the impact breast milk has on the gut microbiome? Do you know what I mean? Like, we know it reduces risk of, you know, infectious illness. We know that it does X, Y, and Z. Is that because, at least in part, the benefits that sort of breast milk?
So I guess those babies, if they're at reduced risk of things like ear infections, chest infections, they're the babies that don't have the antibiotics.
Yeah.
So it's like a
it snowballs, doesn't it? It snowballs. And it's really fascinating. I was reading a paper the other day, you know, I don't think lots of mums don't realise that their breast milk is also full of loads of gut microbiomes. There's a milk, what we call a milk biome, mum's, you know, maternal milk microbiome, blah, 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 blah. Get my words out. And it's fascinating. It's all these, you know, and it's incredible. And there's the discussions going on about, you know, how does that proliferate? And then loads of impact on immune health. And it's amazing. So breastfeed, you know, Anna and I'll always say, you know, something better than nothing kind of thing, you know, even the colostrum at the beginning, that's massive. Yeah. So breastfeeding one, the two is definitely around diversity and getting in a good range of foods for baby. Now, caveated with, I'm not being on a pedestal looking down going, why has your child not had kale and chia seeds and all of these things? You know, feeding kids is hard. Diversity looks like, can we offer a variety of different things that we know are important for gut health? So fruits and vegetables, you know, if you're getting stuck in a rut of peas and broccoli, pick up a different vegetable one week, pick up sometimes I've got some parents, they're brilliant. They're like, well, to start doing that, Lucy, all I did was go into Aldi and just buy all of the vegetables that are front on offer every week, because it changes. So it forces you to,
that's such a good
to do
idea,
something with
it?
Them. Yeah. Not plugging Aldi there, but there was an example.
That's a good idea. Though. They're in front of you. You haven't even got to walk around the aisles.
Yeah, exactly. They're there. They're in front of you. They're the cheap. Like, they're usually really cheap. They're usually in season as well. So great. Things like, so we know fiber, the gut likes fiber, the gut likes plant-based foods. Everybody probably will have heard this. So things like, again, looking at what you can add in. If you make a bolognese, can you whack in some beans or lentils? They're cheap, they come in tins. You know, actually, they're a really cost-efficient way of getting extra protein and fiber into children, you know, compared to meat and fish and things like that. They're great to add in. And then things, you know, I'm a big advocate of like nuts and seeds because they're also healthy fats. And again, it, you know, you don't have to go out and buy the macadamia nuts that we all buy like once every 4 years to make the cookies. You know, it can just be the little bags of like flaxseed, chia seeds, mixed seeds. And you do different sprinkles on breakfast cereal in the morning. Mm-hmm. And you could do a different seed a couple of times a week. And I think that's what I want to make it clear, is that it doesn't have to start with completely overhauling. Or, you know, there's some lovely sort of challenges that I see all the time for sort of adults where it's like, can you do 30 different plant-based foods a week? Don't burden yourself as a parent with these big things, but just go, what can I add in? I kind of, you know, I like the concept of nutrition by addition anyway, because not only are you perhaps doing things that would benefit the gut microbiome, you're adding in extra nutrients too, you know, and so the child's getting a really good variety. And I think, you know, this is one of the reasons why people sort of follow me and have heard me talk before. You know, I, particularly during weaning, there's so much advice out there about weaning. And there's often very specific advice that you can find online about perhaps babies with reflux or sort of sensitive tummies and things like that. And there will be this advice to like give one new food, just one new food every 3 days. And I'm like, for so many reasons, no. Yeah. Yes, perhaps with allergenic foods where we're monitoring for reaction, we're being more cautious. So, you know, your peanuts, eggs, fish, those sorts of things. But the rest of the time, you know, from a gut point of view, but also if I put my feeding therapy hat on and you look at all the data about how important it is children gain experience with food at that period in their life. And it really is a critical window. You know, it's actually between about 6 and 10 months, which isn't long at all. They really benefit from quick and fast rotation between these foods. And no, they might not be having 5 mouthfuls of everything every time. It might just be a little bit, or it might go on the floor. But getting that variety in, changing things up can be brilliant. And wherever you can, if you can make it easier, adapt. What have you got at home anyway? What do you eat anyway? How can you put a little bit of that in that? How can you offer a different vegetable? How can you introduce a different type of grain, or, you know, those sorts of foods? But it's a balance with not burdening yourself with it, but also appreciating that it can be very, very, very beneficial for children.
That's amazing advice. And I definitely think that parents feel a lot of pressure, especially in that early weaning phase, that their child needs to eat what's on their plate.
Yes.
And we've always had a bit of a thing with our little boy, he's now 14 months, in that we will choose what he eats. And generally that's a suitable version of what we eat.
Yeah.
And he can choose how much of that he does or doesn't eat. Because he's able to regulate his own appetite.
Yeah.
And touch all the wood in the office tonight. He's a great little eater. He'll eat anything and everything and loads of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's because we've had that nice relaxed, and he has eaten a bit of anything, and anything he's shown interest in, he's had a bit of. We've rode those kind of waves of when he's had a little fussy moment, there hasn't been, you know, the favourite
snacks
coming out. So we just stay with it. And I think taking that pressure off can be a massive thing.
I think that's, and I think, do you know what, and that has implications as well for children. You know, we know that stress impacts the gut microbiome, and we, you know, I'm bringing it back to gut, but I mean, stress impacts children in lots of ways, and stress impacts us as adults in lots of ways. And actually, you know, I talk a lot in my feeding work about, you know, rule number one about mealtimes for me is making sure that the mealtime is a place of felt safety for children, that they feel calm, they feel relaxed, that they feel able to regulate their appetite, listen to the hunger and fullness cues, and that there's no pressure around what they eat. And like, I know, I mean, I have my nephew enough. I know how frustrating it is when you're like, oh, I really feel like I'm going to make him this avocado pea pasta. I'm so proud of it. Oh, it tastes so good. And they just look at you and they're like, not today. And they kind of just move it around the plate and smush it with their hands. And you're like, oh, yeah.
Great.
God. And
I'll just,
you know,
clean
what?
That up off the
fine to feel frustrated. Yeah, I'll just eat it then. I'll just go away eating it down the corridor. Yeah. Like, screw you then. I'll have it. But though, you know, that's completely normal. That's children going, not today. Eating is hard, hard, hard work for kids. And we sometimes forget that. Yeah. And I think keeping mealtimes chilled, and as you say, letting children have some autonomy over what and how much they want, as long as we're offering it and it's balanced and it's varied, you know. And again, this is where I sometimes see variety creep away, because when children don't eat out, as you say, come the rescue meals, come the top-ups, come the, oh my gosh, they can't go to bed hungry sort of mentality, which is completely natural. But then before you know it, you know, I've got parents coming to me saying, my child has Weetabix for breakfast and lunch, you know, and toast for dinner. And then we've lost that dietary range as well.
Easy traps to fall into, I think.
Easy, so easy, because it's so emotive getting kids to grow and eat, isn't it? And it's something everybody comments, you know, I always say, why is it the forefront of everybody's mind? Well, because people are asking you, people are talking about your baby's growth before they're even born, aren't they?
Yeah. How big's your bump?
How big's your bump? Which centile's your baby growing on? Yeah. Oh, your bump size has dropped. And, you know, I'm certainly having that at the moment. I'm like, wow, there's a lot of anxiety about this. But, you know, I feel fine.
Everyone else is very
worried about all of this. You know, and they come out, how much do they weigh? You know, what are you going to feed them? What are you going to, and again, there's sort of emotion involved in making decision making. Are you going to breastfeed? Are you going to do baby-led weaning or traditional weaning? And, you know, it's I think sometimes it's going back and going, there isn't like necessarily right answers for everything, you know, especially when it comes to weaning and feeding. But like taking the pressure off, I think, is key, you know, for parents, definitely. Anything to take the pressure off.
New parents don't need any more pressure than they've already got.
No, no.
Taking that chill, taking that back seat.
Yeah, just take a step back. And, you know, kids do really well. It's almost as soon as you become nonchalant about what they're doing at a dinner table, everything. Yeah, and they're like, okay, cool, this is great. We're really relaxed here. And you're focusing on your dinner. And it's that moment when you're looking across the table going, with the big eyes, can you see them? They're just eating that. They haven't eaten that for like 2 years.
They're actually
don't say
eating.
Anything.
They're actually eating. Let them carry
Don't
on.
Say anything.
Oh, Lucy, you've given us so much helpful advice. And yeah, I know we've only just scratched the surface on the evidence that's out there around gut microbiome, which is just, it blows my mind. It
absolutely
blows my
mind. Fascinating,
isn't it? But I wonder if you could finish us off with three top tips to boosting your gut health.
Okay. I suppose adults can use some of these things too.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. It's kind of the same, right?
Yeah. Number one, please get outside. It's not diet, but it's so important. Your kid needs to get dirty. You know, yeah, they're going to lick the rock. They're going to put stuff in their mouth. My nephew, whilst we were on holiday by the sea, there was a dead crab and he just picked it up and started licking it. And I was like, oh my
Lovely.
God.
Lovely.
And then I was like, think of his gut microbiome. Think of his gut microbiome.
It's great. So,
you know, we live in really cleanly environments a lot of the time now. And, you know, it is really important. Kids get dirty, they get messy. And that also includes with their food. I'm going to tag that on there and say, let them wear it. Let it be all over them from the sensory experience point of view too. They really need it.
Yeah.
And I had an interesting conversation with a psychologist the other day. He was saying she feels like we're seeing more and more children becoming a little bit more sensory averse because they don't have these experiences.
So, we've all got cream carpets now.
Exactly. Cream carpets and everything's beige or grey and white and it needs to be clean. Yeah. So that would be one. Two would be variety. And that's, you know, I've screamed it throughout this, but variety, think about nutrition by addition. Think about something you can add in, even if it's one thing in a week. Can we add some sprinkles of seeds on some cereal? Can we add or try a different fruit, you know, that's in season? You know, I quite like looking for those things that you don't find all year round. Like, we go wild in this house for a shower and fruit, which only appears this time of year. And then we like buy about 50 of them. We're like, wow, they'll be here for 3 weeks. So try something new. Yeah. And, you know, just to say, it doesn't have to be fresh. You know, pick a different fruit or vegetable from the frozen aisle, or a tinned fruit, or dried. All good.
That's a good tip in the current economic times as well.
Exactly. Yes. It doesn't have to be the expensive fruit stuff.
Yeah.
And you will find that things in season are always cheaper. Like, we ain't growing strawberries at the moment. Have you looked outside? Like, okay, so don't pick a strawberry. Pick a Sharon fruit. There you go. So I would go with those. And then I think the third thing is to really think holistically. So think, you know, lots of practitioners, health professionals will want to think about sort of gut health holistically. So think about antibiotic use and you know, we all want our children to be well. Have honest, open and frank discussions with health professionals about when they're needed and when they're not. Think about the impact of things like stress, the environment, you know, mixing, cleaning, all those things I've talked about at the beginning that you can control or you have some level of control over. But don't sweat the small stuff.
Don't sweat the small stuff. I love that.
Don't
That's
sweat
a good
the small stuff.
Yeah, don't, because we are notorious for beating ourselves up, aren't we? As
100%.
Moms. So it's quite nice. Yep. Like actually, there's little things we can do, but when it's not all perfect,
there's lots of things
and all aligned, that's okay too.
There is no such thing as perfect, but everyone is just doing their best with the information at the time, aren't they?
Just winging it. Okay. Lucy, you're an absolute star. Thank you so much for your time and your expertise. And if you want to see, Lucy's got some awesome content on her Instagram, which is linked in the episode description. So do go and check her out.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. If you've enjoyed this chat and want to hear more on this topic, head over to midwifepip.com. where you'll find my accompanying blog post with highlights, my thoughts, extra information, and additional resources. And remember, leaving a review on my podcast, if you've enjoyed listening, really does make a huge difference to helping me reach more women with honest, reliable information. So please take a moment to do this, because when women support women, amazing things happen.